Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882. With 43 central Nebraska locations, cornerstoneconnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. Support for programming also comes from Constellation Studios, a mixed-use artist's workspace for all types of printmaking and paper projects, featuring printing presses, bookmaking, type shop, and wet paper studio. For info, constellation-studios.net. Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Most of today's show is pre-recorded as we protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19. I'm Genevieve Randall. Coming up on the show this morning, we thought it might be fun to hear the full version of our theme music that you're hearing in the background right now, written and performed by a guitarist who grew up near Baird, Nebraska. That's coming up later this hour. Also today, poet Marge Sizer has written some new poems for Mother's Day. I'll talk to the executive director of the Stir Museum in Grand Island about their virtual art talks, behind-the-scenes videos, and more. Our Friday Live intern, Brandon Thomas, dives into how museums in Nebraska are documenting Nebraska's experiences of the pandemic. Plus, in about 18 minutes, we'll learn how you can see quilts from all over the world at the International Quilt Study Center. Our show starts with a singer-songwriter who grew up in the little town of Tobias, Nebraska, and currently calls Lincoln home. Evan Bartles had his own online concert on his Facebook page recently. He told me he's been thinking about this particular song quite a bit these days. This is Evan Bartles with A Thousand Times here on Friday Live.
I could see the rain coming from 100 miles.
We heard music from Evan Bartels 1 year after the release of his album Promised Land. That was the song A Thousand Times here on Friday Live. There's more music later on in the show. In fact, we decided it might be fun to hear the opening theme of the show in its entirety. That's ahead in about 18 minutes here on NET Radio. Others, the Sturr Museum in Grand Island has some online offerings for those who are stuck at home, who may need a little digital history. Chris Hochstetler is executive director for the Sturr Museum in Grand Island, and he joins me now to talk about how things are going there. Chris, I'm glad to have you on Friday Live this week.
I'm so happy to join you, Genevieve. Thanks for having us.
The summer is usually when the museum is planning to open up along with Railroad Town there. You'd be gearing up for those summer travelers. But of course, you are in one of Nebraska's hotspots there right now. What's going on at the museum right now?
We are in a hotspot, so we are trying to be as socially distant as possible, but still bring wonderful programming to the people who love Sturr Museum. And this actually started back in March when we closed our doors. We challenged our committees, our board, and our volunteers to really develop some pretty robust virtual programming. So I would say that consistently, since mid-March, weekly, we've been delivering some pretty strong virtual offerings that I could talk about if you'd like.
I noticed if you go to the museum website and you click the word education, for example, there are a number of things you'll find there. Do you want to give us that overview there?
Sure. Well, we've got a variety of offerings. Some of them are a little bit more static than others, and some of them are more interactive, depending on how far you want to dive in. But we have leveraged not only our website, but also social media to deliver this content. And I'll just give you an example of some of that content. Early on, we were able to produce a series that we called Hall County Quarantined. And that was a look back. It was rather academic, but it was a look back at a time when Hall County was quarantined for other reasons, like the Spanish flu. And we did that weekly for a period of about 5 weeks, and it was well received. It was really well researched and academic, and we've got some pretty wide coverage with that particular series. And then I actually asked the staff to get a little bit more interactive with folks. So we established some things that we started to do on social media. One of those would be what we call an artifact a day, where we pull a specific piece out of our permanent collection, which is rather extensive, and we spend a little bit of time with it and just presenting that to the public. And they're in little minute, minute and a half, 2 minute segments that we share on Facebook, and we do a deeper dive into an artifact. Another thing that we've done is we've done a behind the scenes Facebook Live consistently several times a week here on the grounds at Sturr Museum, where we bring the public into a place on our 206 acres that they probably wouldn't normally go, even if we were open. We've explored our permanent archive building. We've explored some of the older homes on the property, places in those homes that you wouldn't generally get to go. And that has been very well received. Another offering that we're just so excited about is our photo recreation. That's been going for about 3 weeks now, where we've posted historical photos from our archive and people have recreated those. And then we just post those photos in addition to the historic photos. And you can really see how people just get so creative with this and just expand upon those historic photos. It's pretty comical in some ways. And then there were two sessions that we did that were virtual sessions here at Sturr Museum that were just virtual art receptions, where Brad Melema from the Grand Island Visitors Bureau and myself did some pretty in-depth analysis of artwork that we have here at Sturr Museum, and people joined in for those virtual receptions. So that was a lot of fun.
That's really cool and a great way for people to kind of interact and ask questions about the art and what's going on. Also, like you said, those recreation photos, I was on your Facebook page a little earlier and saw some of those. You've got some inventive people responding to those.
We really do, and we've got some from as far away as Lincoln and Omaha who are submitting this week. So I think that the reach is broadening a little bit.
And I'll mention here that the Stir Museum also has a YouTube channel, I noticed, and that some of those behind-the-scenes tours you've mentioned, those are available on YouTube to watch as well on your channel.
That is correct.
Chris, it sounds like you're making the best of the situation, and I hope that we can keep in touch with you to see what the Stir has going on as this situation moves forward.
Thank you so much, Genevieve. We appreciate the opportunity to bring the museum to people where they're at in this quarantine state.
We'll have links to the Stir Museum website on the Friday Live page as well. Chris Hochstetler is Executive Director for the Stir Museum there in Grand Island. Chris, thank you again, and really stay safe.
Thank you so much.
Informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming, this is NET Radio. Mother's Day is this Sunday, and Marge Sizer has written some new poems for the occasion. Here's Allison Mollenkamp from NET News to read them for us.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom. With my husband and my husband's father, I'm flying back from a relative's wedding. All that hugging and glad to see you, sitting very well with me. Riding now above the clouds, choosing, as I did, to pass over the turbulence between the mother of the groom and the mother of the bride, as if I requested a better cruising altitude, which this is. Above rectangles of flat green and loops of brown river, I'm thinking down there right now, somebody's hugging their mom, or phoning her, or taking a walk alone. Alone, which describes me, my husband and his father deep into their paperbacks, alone, which is not to say lonely. All these one-of-a-kind clouds, scattered below like popcorn on a glass tabletop. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. I thought of you today when, through towering cumulonimbus, a little red plane several thousand feet below us made a beeline for home. To Mom, who is gone. My son has the radial arm saw from your place. He built a new table for it. When we pull into his garage in his pickup, the saw is spiffy a few feet ahead of us, its blade standing like a silver wheel. He had a gift card from Home Depot, and that's what he bought. A new blade to hang like a jewel in that old saw. It will spin, will cut lumber, for a deck off the side of his house. A house you never saw, and I see it for you. I miss you at odd times. In Target, there was a 3-foot Easter rabbit dressed in a green gingham jumper. Mom would have liked that, I told my son. And we stood in line at the checkout and thought about just exactly that.
We heard NET's Allison Mollenkamp reading Marge Sizer's To Mom Who Is Gone and Happy Mother's Day, Mom. This is Friday Live here on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. Stay with the show. We'll hear more music later, and there's more poetry later as well. And in about 20 minutes, we'll get an update from the Bright Lights Summer Adventures program. Staying safe at home for long periods of time is understandably hard on many people, but for avid readers, being trapped in a house with a pile of books is pretty great. This week on All About Books, host Pat Leach welcomes Creighton English professor Brent Spencer, who offers reading suggestions appropriate to the pandemic. You might be surprised, a professor who teaches world lit also enjoys
wonderful escapist literature full of adventure and gunfights and all of those kinds of things. And I sometimes think, boy, do I have a kind of split personality here? Because I can read some of the great Greek tragedies and then enjoy this just as much. But I just think that's who we are as human beings. We just get a lot from every kind of literature there is.
Hear Brent Spencer's picks for the Pandemic Home Reader. It's online at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Wednesday, May 13th, and the following three Wednesdays, the International Quilt Museum presents textile talks in collaboration with other fiber organizations. There are also video series on the museum's Facebook and YouTube channels. And if you go to the Quilt Museum's website, you can explore exhibitions of quilts there as well. Curator of International Collections, Maren Hansen, joins me to talk about their online offerings. Maren, it's great to have you on Friday Live this week.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I went myself and clicked on exhibitions on the Quilt Museum's website, and there are lots of things to see. Would you like to give our listeners a kind of survey of what they'll find there?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's strange to think about exhibitions not being in our big, beautiful galleries on East Campus at UNL, but we are doing all we can to share our fabulous collections with people. We've always had online components to what we do, but that has really become the focus of what so many different organizations are doing today, including us. So we're happy to be able to have pop-up exhibitions, virtual exhibitions. One of the exhibitions we have on our website right now is essentially a preview of an exhibition that would have gone on view in mid-April. Fortunately, we are able to delay its debut until further notice. We're hoping that the museum will be able to open back up to the public at some point in the not too distant future. And we know that these quilts from Russia will wait. They are patiently waiting in our storage area, and they will be able to go on view at a not too distant point in the future. But for now, there's really excellent things you can see online, including those Russian quilts. So we've got quilts from Russia. We've got some Amish quilts you can check out. Then there's lots of other programming that we've been doing in association with that. So some virtual First Friday events. We just had one last week in association with an exhibition about crazy quilts and mad women, which is I love that title. Sarah Walcott, our collections manager, did a wonderful job of pulling together some classic 19th century crazy quilts and then talking about sort of sociocultural phenomena in the late 19th century that kind of contributed to the crazy quilt phenomenon. So yeah, we've got a lot going on online that we hope people will pop on by and check out.
Maren, I have to admit that as the music director at a classical station, there's one quilt that really put a smile on my face. It's based on a Russian fairy tale that Stravinsky was also inspired by, which is the Firebird.
Right. Isn't that wonderful? And in fact, we did a video in association with that virtual exhibition, and we did have some Stravinsky music as sort of the layover or the lay under to that video. So that exhibition we're really excited about, and we can't wait to share the pieces in person. But they look really good online as well. I hope you enjoyed checking them out.
It was really fun. I also enjoyed the pop-up of those Amish quilts you mentioned in the 70s and 80s. I was so surprised to see such bright contrasts in the colors between dark backgrounds and bright colors. That was really fun.
Yeah, and we often think of sort of classic early 20th century Amish quilts. It's interesting to see them as they evolved into the later 20th century as well. So we are always looking at quilts as living traditions. They're not just stuck in the past. They, like we, are constantly evolving.
Maren, one more thing I wanted to ask you about, if you don't mind. I noticed there are also some online education materials, which has probably become pretty important for people as both adults and kids stay home these days.
There's some at-home learning elements that we've always tried to offer, but again, in this new era, we're featuring these things even more prominently. So we've got lots of free downloads, some lesson plans for people who want to incorporate quilts and quilt history and quilt aesthetics, artistry into what they're talking about with their kids at home. Quilts, of course, you can come at them from so many different angles. And even when I'm making a quilt, I'm having to think about mathematics. And there are just so many different elements you can pull out of quilt studies that we're hoping that people who come to our website can get something on that at-home learning page as well.
In addition to textile talks and video series like Three Things About a World Quilt or What in the World Do These Quilts Have in Common, there are educational materials as well. Many quilts to see also at the International Quilt Museum website, and we will make sure we have a link to the Quilt Museum on the Friday Live page at our website as well. Maren Hansen is curator of international collections. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Absolutely, Genevieve. Thanks for having me.
And you can find links to this and much more on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. If you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and wish you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like online or download it. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. That address is netnebraska.org. Next, here on Friday Live, we'll hear our theme music. Alexios Anist grew up near Baird, Nebraska, studied at West Nebraska Community College before getting a degree at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. He went on to learn flamenco guitar in Spain, he played on cruise ships, and he has played jazz music around Denver and has released a handful of albums, two of which are a cross between orchestra and heavy metal. A very diverse musician. His album, Nebraska, was one of the earliest with a blend of styles from his diverse background. This is titled No Rules.
Thank you.
We heard the track No Rules from the album Nebraska, written and performed by Alexios Anist, who grew up in Baird, Nebraska, and has regularly performed over the years in Scottsbluff at the Midwest Theater. He currently works, composes, and teaches in Denver. Next here on Friday Live, have you thought about how this pandemic will be remembered? You may be able to contribute to that effort. Friday Live intern Brandon Thomas spoke to local museums about how that is possible.
I said, well, wait a second. You know, this pandemic, this is history. Although right now, maybe we don't want to look at it from a historical perspective, but years down the road, there are going to be people who want to know what happened and how people handled this particular incident, just like they did back in 1918.
Eric Ewing is the executive director of the Great Plains Black History Museum in Omaha. We'll hear more from him later. Museums across the country are calling for artifacts to illustrate how the pandemic has affected society. Here in Nebraska, a number of museums are collecting as well. I spoke to a few of those museums this week about how those projects are going.
Well, our curatorial staff has been wanting to start this process of collecting for the pandemic.
That's Jessica Brummer. She is the director of communications at the Dira Museum in Omaha.
And they are in regular conversations with their peers at other organizations. And it just kind of became apparent in talking to some other organizations that a lot of us were interested in doing this type of work.
I also spoke with Carrie Meyer, the head of special collections and archives at the McGugin Library at the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. The process involves a lot of sifting through submissions, which include medical and homemade masks, pictures, oral histories, and Twitter posts.
As far as social media and that kind of data, we've been getting tons of it. And we do a Twitter scrape, social media scrape, about every couple, 3 days. And so we're just compiling all of that. And then we will actually, so some of it is we've been establishing the scope for the collecting as we go. And so we're getting everything. We know in there there's duplication. We know in there there's things that maybe somebody mentions COVID, but it has nothing really to do with what we're trying to collect. So those things will go away. The digital portion of it is far more extensive right now than the physical. Usually, you know, digital's in the moment, and the physical stuff will come after.
The submissions display the emotional impact the pandemic has had on society. The process for selecting artifacts can be difficult. In some cases, curators are asking for specific artifacts, and other museums are accepting any and all. It's hard to know what kind of connection someone might have to any one artifact.
And so often blogs, Facebook, how celebrities or others are tweeting about things, the doctors that are putting information out, that is the modern form of a diary. Mm-hmm. It's the modern form of these journaling that we get from folks about yesteryear. So that is just as important. It's that initial visceral response. And so it is very valuable.
For example, one of the more unusual...
This is Laura Mooney. She is the senior objects coordinator at History Nebraska.
Is a little paper bag with a message on it. And a person had bought a donut for a friend. And they wrote a lovely little message about how she was missing her friend, put it on her front porch with the donut. And one of my colleagues saw this on social media and thought, this is a way that we can show in the future how people were dealing with isolation, social distancing, communicating with friends. So we decided that was something we really wanted to have for our collection. So we didn't want the donut, but this paper bag with this lovely little message, I think will be really impactful when people see it in an exhibit in the future.
Many local museums have been closed since March and are assessing the reality of the project. Some don't have the staff to sift through hundreds of submissions or have limited ability to display artifacts. At the Great Plains Black History Museum in Omaha, Executive Director Eric Ewing says that the most important thing is that the stories are being told.
I said, well, you know, maybe I should, you know, try to capture this information, and not just the information, but capture it from the perspective of African Americans, because when big world events occur, you know, it tends to impact some more than others. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, our story was told, and not just told, but told from our perspective versus someone collecting that information that didn't necessarily connect with the information.
Here's Jessica Brummer from the Durham Museum again.
I think a process like this, when you're being really intentional is the word I would use, you know, really intentional about gathering those stories and perspectives, whether they be good or bad. Nothing's right or wrong in this scenario because everyone is experiencing this time in a different way. You know, we're not asking for only the warm, fuzzy stories. We want to know what real life is like for people.
I don't know if we have learned as much as we should have and could have. We've evolved and things have changed and technology-wise, but still some of our behavior and our quest to get back out there, even at the risk of causing more loss. It's kind of one of those, as they would, I guess, the conundrum.
If artifacts don't get cataloged, time could easily forget what happened during the pandemic.
This is an important time in all of our lives. We want to hear from you. Be thinking about what's happening and maybe think of a way to process that.
Here's a list of participating museums. Douglas County Historical Society, the Durham Museum, El Museo Latino, Great Plains Black History Museum, History Nebraska, Sarpy County Museum, UNO Libraries, Archives and Special Collections, and University of Nebraska Medical Center, McGugan Library of Medicine. If you're interested if your local museum is participating in the collection, don't be afraid to ask. A list with contact information can be found at our website at netnebraska.org/radio, or look to our Facebook page. For Friday Live, I'm Brandon Thomas.
I'm Genevieve Randall. This is Friday Live on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Stay right here. We'll hear about how the Bright Lights Summer Adventures Camps are going digital. And in about 9 minutes, we'll dig into our archives for some poetry by Bill Clefcorn. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website. There are some online-only or other socially distant events showing up. Keep in mind that some events listed may have been canceled or postponed, so it's a good idea to call ahead or check websites for changes. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. Spring Creek Prairie in Denton will hold their annual celebration of all things avian tomorrow. It's moved online this year. Jason the Bird Nerd will lead participants on a Facebook Live bird walk at 10 a.m. And local author and UNL professor Larkin Powell will discuss his book at 11:30 a.m. The book is titled Great Plains Birds. And there are more activities held on Zoom in the afternoon as well. And on Thursday, the Bemis Center's Live at Low End presents Omaha-based composer, artist, and musician Dustin Bouchon in a virtual concert at 8 p.m. For more information about these or other events, or to add your own event, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
The Polish Heritage Center in Nebraska celebrates its 20th anniversary this year, but things are a little different than the original plan. One special coincidence is the mention of the center in a new book.
His name is Mariusz Gramora, and the title of the book is 100 Years of Polish Diplomatic Presence in the United States, 1919 to 2019. In the very first chapter, he talks about his trip
to Loop City and Ashland and just how impressive that was.
Learn how the Polish Heritage Center Museum will open safely, about a traditional Polish style of pottery, and about that book in this week's Friday Live Extra podcast, available wherever podcasts are found or online at netnebraska.org/radio. Friday Live, the Bright Lights Summer Learning Program has made some changes to their summer plans. Lori Paulson is Executive Director, and she joins me to talk about how that is going to work. Lori, it's great to have you on the show this week.
Thanks for having me.
Bright Lights is usually hosting classes and summer camps all over the city of Lincoln in the summer. So tell me a little bit about what your timeline was and how you've made changes and kind of rolled with the punches that we've got this summer.
We plan year-round for our summer camps, and the first pin to kind of fall was that in early February, we realized that perhaps our Japanese students who come from Japan, there's about 60 that normally come for international camps, that was at risk, so we started planning at that point. They wanted to come, and they just canceled maybe a week ago. At that point, we started thinking, well, we need to make Plan B for the rest of our camps. And so we started that planning in March. I really didn't think that early in March when we started that would actually occur. Our camps are very hands-on, STEM-specific learning, and thinking of what that would be like, our students not being able to do that was just too sad to think about initially. But we started making plans on how we could change things up and still meet the needs of students.
Friday Live highlights arts and humanities across the state, which includes, of course, music and photography, history and culture. So what kinds of classes does Bright Lights offer that are in those categories?
We pride ourselves not only on STEM, but STEAM, which adds the A or the arts to those offerings. Lots of creative endeavors for our campers. We have a lot of writing. We had a lot of journaling and writing classes. We have lots of creativity, like funky furniture, where they were going to work with furniture to make it new again. New class or camp this year was called Project Funway instead of Project Runway, where they were upcycling and being creative with design of clothing. We also had some great kindergarten Picasso, some young Picasso camps that really focused on art and inspiring young artists. So that was part of our 104 camps that would be offered this summer.
It's just amazing. So now things are a little bit flipped on their head. Tell us about how you have reorganized and flipped things around this summer.
Well, our plans are, and we're working on those details now, are to do our virtual learning instead of the hands-on in person, but to use the same elements that we use on-site. We're looking at 10 to 15 of our either easily translatable camps or popular camps, and we're looking at, our instructors and teachers are working on kind of converting those right now. We still want them to be interactive. We still want them to be highly engaging, but we're going to be doing that via Zoom, and we're able, because of our generous donations from our donors, as well as just the support of our board and our teachers, we're going to be able to offer those for free. So we're expecting 10 to 15 of those camps to be offered during the 5 weeks that we normally would have camp, but we're just going to be doing those online. Campers can find out more, families can find out more at brightlights.org. We'll have those up probably in the next 2 weeks. They will need to register, but again, no fee. And that is really exciting for us because we get to reach some campers that we normally wouldn't get to reach.
Lori, it's kind of funny. It occurs to me with all of these things having to be flipped around, some of the teachers are almost going to learn as much as the students trying to convert these classes into an online format.
They are. are, and we always look for teachers that are really passionate about their topic. So what I've really found is that teachers that care that much about what they're teaching, especially when it's something they choose to in the summer, they're even more willing to go the extra mile to learn how to do things differently. We've got some good support for them, too. But you're right. They're in a high learning curve as well right now.
Lori Paulson is Executive Director for Bright Lights Summer Learning Adventures. They are flipping things around and bringing select Bright Lights camps straight to students this summer virtually online.
We're kind of excited because we hope to record those also and then have those available kind of year-round for families to access. We're evolving as we go, and I think it's going to make us even better.
Lori, thank you so much for talking with me.
My pleasure.
And you can link to more about those virtual camps or anything you hear about here on the show this morning by going to the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. About 6 minutes here on Friday Live, we'll learn about some events in Omaha. There's also more music ahead with a recording from a Hastings College professor. Next here on Friday Live, two state poets before Matt Mason. The state poet was William Clefcorn, longtime professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. Clefcorn recorded a poetry series for NET Radio called Poetry of the Plains until he died in 2011. From that series, here are three of his unpublished poems.
Saturday, early April. Not only at midnight, but also at mid-morning, lilacs at the edge of blooming, scent of another day thick with promise. And at the homestead, here in the heart of cornland, I sit on the back porch with my wife of so many seasons. We are cozy in chairs that murmur slightly as they rock, and we are drinking black coffee from white porcelain cups passed on to us from parents, those pioneers whose forebears were likewise pioneers. And with the advent of a new sun rising, we listen to what a small breeze through the limbs of a nearby oak are whispering. As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master. Each syllable from our rockers joining in. I take that to mean, intones the woman beside me, that if I want a second cup of coffee, I must fetch it for myself. I nod. She is gone, and when she returns, I smile, because she has elected to bring me a second cup also. And we return to our watching and listening and rocking, each chair moving at its own individual pace, yet each a part of what maybe it means to have formed, to be forming yet, and then no doubt to form again and again and again a more perfect union. This is called an old story. There are a lot of old stories, and one of them is that we like to go out. It's the on the road again story. On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Another old story involves the subject of getting off the road, of coming back home again. Gee, it's great to be back home again. An old story. It's such an old, old story. Landlocked and wingless, we speak of flight until anticipation turns to action, and off we go into the wild blue yonder. Air and most everything else too rare to be taken sufficiently in. rings on the fingers of each bohemian, bells on the toes, music we can't very well dance to wherever we go. Until what was once upon a time so pedestrian becomes that faraway place with its strange-sounding name. And having first thought, then whispered it, we say it aloud first to each other, then in mixed company, then to the stars as we hopscotch our way across the heavens like the children we were born to be, home. And I'll close with a poem called My Understanding. My Understanding, one of many. It came not so much in the plot of the story, delivered by the lips and the throat and the tongue of my Sunday school teacher, Mrs. Heath, who spoke of one special sheep that wandered far away from the herd, a stray, she called it. How, when it was discovered missing, its shepherd left his flock to search for it. And mind you, she said, he did not relinquish the search until he had found it, whereupon he cradled it in his arms and returned it to the fold. As it was in the sound of the old woman's voice, its intonations so soft, so reassuring, its rhythms rising and falling, its words at times so delicate and absolute. Ah, fold, ah, stray and flock, mind you, and relinquish and cradled, each a sheep in its own way, being found and delivered. And this is my understanding, no more the saving of the sheep than the measured delivering of words that brought the story to me, breath from the lungs of an old woman staying with me, my shoes at the time, such as they were, unable to reach the floor, the oak bench needing my young boy's tender rump to mush, or later to salt, as with Lot's wife I turned my head to look at my buddy Galen, both of us older now and wiser, both on our way to waiting for our teacher's version of the story to work its wonders and somehow, bingo, return us to where and to what, once upon a time, we were.
We heard the late William Cluffcorn reading three of his unpublished poems from the NET Radio Archives, My Understanding, An Old Story, and we began with Saturday, Early April. You're listening to Friday Live, serving your community anywhere that might be. This is NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Still ahead, in about 4 minutes, we'll hear music performed by a piano professor who teaches in Hastings. Amplify Arts in Omaha is presenting a virtual sound exhibition. Corbin Hirschhorn of KVNO has more.
Amplify Arts Generator Space grant recipients, artists Alex Jacobson and Allegra Hangen, will virtually present A Memory Held in You, a collaborative experiment in sound, video, and memory. Initially set to be performed live at the space, the work has been reimagined for a Facebook and Instagram live stream. The artists met at the Bemis Center as interns, and Jacobson and Hangen have unique interests in audio and visual presentation, respectively. Jacobson has a predisposition for noise, like this.
I am a glutton for noise. I love really both noise in like a quiet spatial setting, like being in an apartment and hearing the traffic outside, or even like more loud, abrasive sort of sounds. I primarily use field recorders and software called MaxMSP in Ableton. I will process the sounds with those two softwares. The big point for me in my editing process is I'm recording performances, and then as I go about the performances, I'm performing with the performances and creating the sort of feedback with all that, creating a new noise.
Hangen's work in this show often responds to Jacobson's soundscape, but both share an interest in playing with the familiar, whether it's everyday noises or images.
Mainly what I do with video is found footage. I use found footage that I normally get from archive.org. It's a really great website of basically free to use media of all kinds. And so I kind of just go through old family films that I find on there, cut them up and reutilize them, reappropriate them. With this collaboration with Alex, I've even been using different images that show things in nature or like galaxies or the like old school special effects to kind of try to show what the universe would maybe look like if you could record it in the 60s or 70s.
A Memory Held in You, no doubt, explores the creation of memories, personal memories, collective memories, and those related to a certain place, in this case, the gallery.
So I think memory plays in a lot for both me and Alex in our own individual work. For me, almost all of my video work is around memory. Even photo work is around memory. And conceptually, we're kind of just trying to think of how memories are either held in or created by different media. In the world of sound, I guess Alex can talk a little bit more about this, but there's some really interesting concepts that I'm just starting to learn about.
One concept the artists explore is the pathetic trigger, or the idea that an ordinary stimulus can lead to a path of memories.
You hear it or you experience it, and then immediately whatever association you have with that sound or image is projected into your being. Like if they're in a neighborhood, what does that neighborhood sound like? What would that associations be related to that? Can we create a collective memory through the space so everyone is experiencing a similar but different thing?
How can we all tap into this larger sort of like virtual memory that exists outside of like individuals, but how can each individual sort of experience that memory in their own way? And everyone will have their own sort of connections to, yeah, let's say like walking down Dodge Street in Omaha. There are certain sounds that we'd expect to hear. So if you hear that in a gallery space, what are the memories that are triggered for you specifically that you've had walking down Dodge Street?
A Memory Held in You opens tomorrow night, Friday, May 8th at 8 p.m. via Amplify Arts Facebook and Instagram pages, as well as the artists. The gallery on Vinton Street will also display the exhibition through their windows throughout the month. The artists recommend headphones or large speakers for the performance. For more information, find Amplify Arts on Facebook.
For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirschhorn.
And a quick note that that show has been changed. It is tonight at 9 p.m. I'm Genevieve Randall. We get to hear another musical selection next here on Friday Live from a recording by Jonathan Sakasits. He is professor of piano, piano pedagogy, class piano, piano literature, and music theory at Hastings College. Composer Dana Wilson says this music explores, among other things, ambiguity. This movement is called Driving Home from Wilson's Sound Travels, performed by Jonathan Sakasits.
Thank you.
We heard a piece there from composer Dana Wilson's Sound Travels titled Driving Home, as played by Jonathan Sakasitz, professor of piano at Hastings College. Coming up this morning here on NET Radio, we'll hear classical music on Morning Concert. And this afternoon, Bruce Wallace is in for Laura Black on Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of Friday Live at netnebraska.org/radio. Most of Friday Live is pre-recorded these days. Thanks so much to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Brandon Thomas, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall. Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Union Bank and Trust, with hardship loans and special considerations to help customers through these uncertain times. The people of UBT are here for Nebraskans and available by phone anytime. Member FDIC.